Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Welcome to the intro of the Nerdist Podcast, number 289. We've just launched our brand new show on the Nerdist channel, Neil Patrick Harris, Neil's Puppet Dreams. Every time Neil falls asleep, he dreams in puppets. And it's on the Nerdist channel, and it's amazing. It's musical. It's puppety. It's Neil Patrick Harris-tastic. So go there, youtube.com/Nerdist, and then click subscribe so you can see it. It'll be a weekly show for several weeks. And enjoy! I would like to thank Samsung for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. The Galaxy Note 2 has a ton of sharing capabilities. There's S-Beam, where you can just tap the back of another S-Beam-enabled device, and you can share large files in seconds. There's ShareShot, where you can share pictures, 8-megapixel pictures, taken with the Galaxy with other phones up to 200 feet away. There's an S-Pen, which basically makes the device like a virtual notepad. And then the screen itself, the Galaxy Note 2 is like a 5.5-inch screen, and it's perfectly shaped for 16:9 aspect ratios for watching widescreen movies. So thank you so much to the Galaxy Note 2 and to Samsung for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is my old friend Maria Bamford. I love Maria Bamford. Maria was on the podcast a couple years ago, and then the first year she came on. And I think I've made no secret about the fact that Maria is one of my favorite comedians of all time. I mean, like, if you listen to this podcast, you've probably seen Bamford. Like if you saw her Comedians of Comedy or if you followed her anywhere else, but I think she is one of the most original minds in comedy, and I adore her. And I hadn't talked to her for a long time, and I was like, I wonder where Maria is. I had no idea what she had gone through, but she'd sort of dropped off for a while, and it all kind of came out in this podcast. And number one, I'm a shitty friend because I didn't know any of this. But number two, I'm thoroughly impressed and amazed that she got through everything the way that she did. And I think it's kind of hopeful in the end. But anyway, I just adore this woman, and please check out Maria's comedy if you haven't. And here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 289 with Maria Bamford. Oh, I should mention that she has a new comedy special coming up soon, but she talks about it in the podcast, so you'll find out all about it. All right, I love you guys.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm a turkey baby. My fucking birthday is until around Thanksgiving.
Every year, it's always even when I was a kid, I would have the, yay, it's my birthday. Everyone's gone because it's a holiday. And it turns out my birthday is not the most important thing this week. Damn you, Thanksgiving. Oh.
I am not grateful.
I'm not grateful that I was born around this holiday. Yeah. I think it's unfair. I think our pilgrim forefathers would agree.
Yeah.
That is not cool. It's not cool at all. Anyway.
Are you guys going to go? Do they have sea lions up there in Santa Barbara?
I don't. I'm sure they're. Yes.
I'm fantasizing about your trip already.
There are sea lions who carry you out to sea to be blessed by a sorcerer whale. You drink from this magic fluid that comes from his enchanted blowhole. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
That feels so great.
And Santa Barbara herself.
Yes, Alexandra. It's a Christmassy lesbian woman. She's like, you know.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Now, are we, what should I, are we recording now or how do I?
No, this is happening already.
Oh, it's
Bamford.
Already happening.
Yeah. Jonah is.
I can't even believe it.
Jonah's very ill. He's not been able to get out of bed all day. He's lazy way. He's very sick. And Matt Myra's shooting some of the last strands of Attack of the Show forever. So it's just the two of us today. I hope that's okay.
No, it's totally fine. And Jonah, is he have a caretaker or somewhere nearby to help him?
He's like an old mansion. He has a caretaker and no groundskeeper, though. If you've seen him, you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean,
yes, his girl, his fiance, Deanna, is taking care of him.
Oh, fiance. I know. Delightful.
They're going to make the sacrament with the Lord.
Oh. Well. It's just a piece of paper in the party, but it's pretty awesome. No, it's a delightful. I only wish the best for them. Are they registered anywhere that I can forget?
Probably at Amoeba. Probably at Amoeba and Urban Outfitters. Oh. I don't know.
We just want some fuzzy pink pillows.
I just
Looks
want
like
some
monsters.
I just want a Rascals box set and a flannel shirt and some old-timey glasses. Not too old-timey.
No.
Like Mad Men old-timey.
No.
Not like Teddy Roosevelt old-timey.
No.
Not that much.
A particular picture of time, which you'd want to. You could be Mad Men, but it would have to be the other part where the people who were Jack Kerouac glasses.
Those ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Brett Bamford, it's just so nice to actually be able to catch up with you because we have not spoken in ages.
No, everybody's so busy, which means everyone's very successful.
or just keeping ourselves busy.
Yeah. But, that's true. Feeling some deep chasm. Oh, that could be.
Every morning, gotta wake up, gotta fill the hole, gotta fill the hole, gotta cover the hole, gotta fill the hole, fill the hole, cover the hole. Here we go, filling the hole, filling the hole, filling the hole. Gotta sleep. And it's time to fill the hole again. Fill the hole, fill the hole, fill the hole.
Coffee in the hole.
Put some coffee in the hole. Some video games would be fun in that hole. Not enough video games. I'm just a landfill. I'm a landfill of distraction.
If only we could do something with the trash and use it to fill our spiritual holes. To recycle.
I'm looking to fill my spiritual hole. Do you have any recommendations? I love your bit so much about that sounds like church. Where
But it, I know a lot of things sound like church. Well, the churches have such great marketing now, you know, that they're more like self-help gurus like Dale Carnegie. You
right.
know, sort of like, you can win in life. And it's like, where does it say that in the Bible? I thought it was all about giving all your stuff away and not telling anybody about it. It turns out it's about knowing that God wants you to have that house. You deserve that because God loves you, especially when you take care of yourself and get highlights regularly. And wait a minute, where's that in the
That sounds like
scripture?
Hollywood church. Is that actor church? That sounds like actor church.
Which is totally, I mean, I totally end up, I realize my hair keeps getting blonder and blonder. It's like, what's happening that I've completely lost? I mean, I've completely sold out on my original vision. But I'm redecorating my house in shades of gray. What?
How many? 50?
50 shades of gray. No, the actual ethical.
I'm putting a torture fuck chamber where the guest room was.
Is that, have you read that book?
No.
Yeah, okay, good for you.
No.
I tried it. Jackie Cation, who's a comedian friend of mine.
Jackie Cation.
She brings romance novels on the road, and sometimes I will look at them, and they are offensive.
offensive.
They're, you know, it's... It's not real, Jackie, okay? That's not really happening. Guys aren't wearing kilts.
A young woman just wants to be dominated. That's all she wants. Yeah. She just wants to find the right tiger to come along and pin her down. Like,
I
what is
someone
happening?
Someone abusive and terrifying, but with a gentle streak. Wait a minute.
I want to get negged and then hugged. I'm trying to figure out, because when I went home to visit my dad over the summer, my stepmom, in front of my stepsisters, like somehow 50 Shades of Grey, they're like, we're reading this book, 50 Shades of Grey. And they all got beet red.
Like, as they should.
Like it was dirty, yeah, yeah. You know. And I knew, and no offense to them, but I knew that if they loved it so much and they turned beet red, that I'd probably be like, this may not be for me. I don't know if this book's going to be for me.
I have not read it, so I probably should not say anything about it.
Very sweet Southern moms are going crazy over it.
Okay. So, yeah, I've heard it's about domination. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I just, I feel like I get a lot of that in real life.
The entertainment business is a
up,
very...
stupid cunt before I snap your neck in half.
Oh, entertainment business.
Wait.
I'm dommed by the entertainment business constantly. It is my gray torture chamber sometimes for the longest time is the
entertainment business. Which is, and it's a delight, but it is not unlike a parent that is never satisfied.
Except it's like, I'm being pinned down, I'm being fucked. Where's the orgasm part? Where's the release? When does that part happen?
Well, that's when you... I have a new joke premise where, of course, once you say that, then it's... I lose confidence in it. Anyways, it's that relationships are just like stand-up, or that I've realized that I need to put the same kind of acceptance and unyielding effort that I have toward show business, you know, because, I mean, there have been weeks where I've been in Laughlin, Nevada with blood on the wall, and I've questioned, you know, what I'm doing. Will I allow that discomfort in a relationship for any short period of time? No.
Sure.
No. So I'm trying to, you know, just kind of trying to suck it up more in relationships. Like, why, you know, what is the equivalent of an open mic for a relationship? It's probably, you know, the first six dates.
Yeah.
You know, because when people ask, you know, how do you do stand-up? You're like, you just do it, you know. But you have to sit there for 6 hours. Nobody's listening. Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing.
And you're constantly in the first six dates. You're trying out material, trying to make it connect. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Then you go back and focus on the stuff that does.
It's not necessarily easy, but then 40 years later, you're on a cruise with your sweet pea who knows everything about you and says, you know, and people are like, how'd you guys do it? Inertia. And that's what stand-up has been. Like, how'd you do it? Well, I applied to several graduate schools, and there was no response. So I seems like this is good. And the equivalent of a cruise is me doing Flappers in Claremont this weekend.
This weekend, Flappers in Claremont. That's so funny. I love. So if you went on a date with a guy named Laughlin.
Yeah.
And you went to his apartment,
oh,
and there was blood on the walls, and general silence when you exposed your deepest thoughts.
Yeah.
Would you continue to date that guy, or would you be like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow night for two more times?
Well, I'd say maybe this is good for me to just develop and stand in my own personality. Like, go, it's okay if he hates me. You know, it's okay if he doesn't like me. We'll just see how it goes. It's 2 weeks. What's 2 weeks in my life?
Right.
And eventually, yeah, maybe you start saying no to gigs in Laughlin, or you don't. either way, I think I need to be a little less precious about. It gave me hope thinking about that. Like, oh, if I put the same kind of effort. Be willing to get myself hurt because you put up with so many things in entertainment, you know, or it's stand up or being yelled at or whatever, and it's like you know, I don't want to get together with a guy who's like, hey babe, I just want to let you know I would never hit you, because you're going to be getting a beatdown right quick. Brace for impact. Papa's coming home. But
that's weird. I don't remember asking if you were going to hit me. So why would you just bring it up?
It needs to be brought up. I think there might be something coming my way.
I'm never going to cut you if that's what you're worried about. I wasn't even thinking about that. We were just, I said, do you want to watch Wheel of Fortune? And then you said cutting. I don't know.
Oh, sometimes I get arrested because I don't like ice in my drinks. Oh my God, that's awesome. I cry at everything. Let's help each other.
Let's make a baby. Let's make a knife baby.
No, these are bits from my act. I should try to be more creative in the moment. Hey.
I don't give a shit. I love your act. Listen, if you just came on the podcast and just did your act, I would be thrilled.
Well... Thanks, Chris. You're very supportive.
I adore you. You're one of my favorite comics. And I'm bummed that I don't get to, you know, I feel like there was a period of time where we used to do a lot of shows together.
Know.
I have not seen you in ages. And I, of course, that's largely my fault because I don't perform in LA much anymore.
Right. No, and I don't either. Like, I feel like, well, I think my priorities have definitely changed where I go, okay, I just want to earn some money out of town. And then when I come home, I go, I'd like to develop new material, but I'd rather go to an open mic or someplace really low pressure rather than UCB. I mean, UCB, I love it there, but sometimes my ego wants me to do really well.
Well, of course.
And it's like, yeah, I don't develop new material that way.
Right, right. Of course.
Afraid of...
Well, that's going away, though. Scott's not doing Bang Bang anymore.
He's not.
No, it's ending in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Oh, well then...
Now you just have Meltdown.
Now I just have Meltdown.
And you have Tiger Lily.
But Tiger... Well, yeah, and I don't... And I think it's probably... I mean, I know it's all in my head and that I could do more L.A. But you know what I love is I love that the Comedy Bureau website.
Yeah.
Is that not a delight? Operated by that kid named Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows you all the open mics and book shows every single day. It's a fresh read and it's free. And then you can contact the bookers from there. Anyways, that's what I enjoy doing is I like performing the night of.
Yeah.
Go to someplace. You know, I don't know, the basement of a Chinese restaurant. No one is paying attention.
It's funny you say the basement because there was the one in Silver Lake on Hillhurst. It's the upstairs from the Golden Palace.
Oh, it is still there. It is twice a week, I think.
Yeah. I did some sets there getting ready for... I performed everywhere when I was getting ready for the special, and that was... It's so funny because it's hard not to have in the back of your head because it's sort of a loft.
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, all of my... I just said the word cock, and it just bled over into people's lo mein. Like, it just fell over the railing into some egg drop soup.
Yeah, I know, because it is kind of an elegant restaurant. Like, the people downstairs are very elegant, and there's a bar, and it's very polite. I do feel like I want to order something when I get there.
We would like the, we'll have some soup and then the Chinese chicken. So my boyfriend wants to have butt sex all the time. Oh no, what's happening?
Wait a minute.
No more.
I love comedy. But not that kind.
Comedy. It'll sneak up on you.
It will. Sometimes it frightens you. I was at a soul food restaurant downtown. I think it's Nella's.
Okay, I don't know.
And people were having a delightful dinner of soul food. You know, beautiful meals, beautiful tables full of people having special moments, wanting the dinner to last.
So you're saying that they were very ready for a comedy show.
Well, let's just say when there was started to be feedback in the speakers, they thought, what a relief, because we were connecting as friends and family. And
here's some soul sucking for your soul food.
Yeah, and not only, it's a mostly black clientele, and it's going to be white hipsters going up and telling their story, which I'm sure is entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that it is good that it's happening, that there's some limit to people's freedoms, you know, to have a good meal in a restaurant. Yeah, you're done now.
That's it.
Yeah. Life is so happy here in Los Angeles. You've got to have some limits.
Are you touring a lot? Are you going out with Jackie a lot?
I usually do. I go out like twice or three times a month, and I'll do like middle of the week dates are, you know, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday type of deal. And it's just great because it's people who come out to see me or something, or at least they're out on a Wednesday. So they've thought about it and thought, do I want to, it's Wednesday. And at least they're willing to risk something. Whereas Friday or Saturday, people are less, they're mad. And they got free tickets.
They're mad because I got these free tickets and I'm just so mad about it. I just have to go and be mad at the show.
So mad. Why is comedy so not funny in the way that I'd like it to be funny?
Why can't they make jokes about my office? Why can't they make jokes about my Aunt Nan?
Well, and I totally relate, because there is a sales job going where it's like when you call the clubs and they go, oh, it's somebody really funny this weekend, you know, and it's like, because they kind of want to get people in there.
Sure.
But then it can be a terrible disappointment for both parties.
Well, it's also, you know, some people just have an idea that comedy is just this one thing.
Yes.
That they can go, you know, it's like cheese, you know?
Yeah, cheese. Oh, cheese.
Oh, I know cheese.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I like it.
And then you go to the, then you actually go to the cheese section at a store. Oh, there's a lot of different kinds of cheeses, and some of it's stinky and some of it's crumbly.
Yeah.
And
some of it's Swiss.
And then you're like, maybe I don't like cheese.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yep. That is so true. We're in the cheese business.
We're in the cheese business. We're in a little bit in the cheese business on a lot of levels. Selling cheese.
Can I tell you about my thing that I wanted to promote, which is my special?
Do you do a comedy special?
No, your special. How did you plan? But first, let me ask. Do your special?
How did I do it?
Yes.
Well, I found out that I was doing it in December of last year, and then I shot it in February, and then and so just had like 6 weeks really to like. Better pull this shit together. You know? And then, and it was fun. It was fun. It reminded me of why I love comedy, because I was performing constantly and trying bits and they weren't working, and then reworking them and fitting them in and looking at the, you know, like I would love to see the musical montage of that 6 weeks, like writing bits and making bits and putting them together. And it was really fun, and I had a great time, and I loved doing it, and I was very happy with it.
Was it in a theater?
It was shot in New York.
Okay, sweet. Oh, awesome.
It was shot in New York at the Skirball Center.
Oh, the Skirball.
Yeah, you've done it.
Lovely.
Yeah. Such a nice space.
Yeah.
And it was good. I had a great time. How about yours?
I'd have to ask you, yep. Was it distributed by...
It was Comedy Central.
Comedy Central, sweet, yes. Sweet. Okay. Yeah, and I like the... Louis C.K. did the direct download to fans, so I just did a version of that, except I thought, I was a little bit nervous about having a giant crowd, I mean, and whether I could get a giant crowd. And so I thought, just go to the source, which is my parents. So it's just me... performing my one-hour special for my parents. There's a keyboard player.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Does your mother, does she talk back to you during the show?
She doesn't talk to you, but the interviewer afterwards, but there's not, and they just have, they're having a good time. I mean, they had some critiques afterwards, obviously, but I know.
What did your mom say about it?
Well, she said, she said that one of my jokes was kind of mean and that she thought I should, you know, that it's just, it wasn't nice.
Did you do your material about your parents to your parents?
Yes, yes, yes.
With your dad laughing and
Yeah. And I did, I have my most favorite bits right now are all about suicide. And I served pizza before I began that chunk, you know, so they could have something to stuff down the hole.
That's
case. They felt, you know, overwhelmed. They were lovely. I mean, they were also paid.
Did you do this? You meant to pay them.
Yeah.
Did you do this in Minnesota?
No. I did it. I wish I had done it at their house. That would have been super fun. But I did it at my own house.
Oh, you did it at your place.
In my living room. Jackie Cation opened. She warmed up the crowd. And
so fantastic.
And yeah, and the crew kind of sits with my parents because there's no room.
Right.
It's a really small living room, so.
Is it the same house that you've been in for a while?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I love your house. Yeah. Your house is great.
Thanks. So it was fun. I mean, it was really fun to do it. You know, when you have like a bunch of material and you just want to get it out.
Yeah.
Like, just be like, okay, this is recorded or done somewhere, and now I'll start anew.
Yeah.
That was a nice part. So.
How long had this stuff been brewing?
5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So you were excited to just.
I was too.
There are some jokes where you go, if I fucking say this joke out loud one more time. Yeah. The universe is going to strike back in some way to stuff it back in my stupid face.
Yeah. I cannot take myself. Yeah. Can't say it anymore. And then did you find that people like your older material better than your newer material?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what you're comfortable with. And I think what's interesting about material is that it has this weird shelf life that is not necessarily temporal as much as it is sort of, I don't know how else to say it, it's almost like spiritual for you in the sense that when you're excited about it and it feels organic and, you know, because I know I've had jokes before that used to kill.
Right, right.
And then after a while, some of the magic stops and then it's like, oh, I think maybe this just isn't natural for me anymore, and that was more representative of that time.
Right, right. That's true. But then there's somewhere they're like crowd pleasers, and I always hate myself when I go.
No, you shouldn't feel bad about that.
No,
you shouldn't feel bad about that because I think it should be a nice.
I don't like it.
I think those are fine because I think it's a balance. You know,
it's
if you want to try new stuff, I think it's okay to throw a couple crowd pleasers to sort of like grease the grill.
Yeah, yeah. And if, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, and it's so self-involved. I mean, people are just coming to see a show. Like, it's like, I remember, it's like, whenever I go see a show, I'm just like, oh, this is a show.
So what are your crowd pleasers? What are your crowd pleasers, you think?
Well, the current ones, which are probably running on 7 years old now. Oh, no. And sometimes people make little request ones, which makes me feel good. Like, you know, they like secretarial ones that I had from about 10 to 15 years ago.
Danette?
Yeah. And they like, the coworker. And then, so I do one about love songs and relationships. It's, you know, my last album.
Love Songs on the Coast with Delilah. Where are you calling from tonight? What are your requests and dedications? What's your name? Where are you calling from? Hi, Amy calling in from Tustin, Arizona. What's going on with you tonight, Amy? So you and Matt broke up. That's hard. That's tough. What do you want to say to Matt tonight? We'll play that for you. That's Penny Lover by Lionel Richie.
I'm very proud of that joke, but I need to move on.
I also like the lady comic joke.
Yeah. Which, that's an older one too. Yeah.
I'm a husk.
I'm a husk. I can't feel my hands.
Do you feel like your material now is more personal, or where are you?
Well, the ones I just recorded were about, some half personal, half not. And but the stuff that I was super excited was about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And just that mental illness, like the 7,000 U.S. veterans die of suicide every year, which is funny because you think they die over there, but they come home. Everyone's Oh, I thought it must be funny because nobody was taking it seriously. because I have had some experience with my family and with myself. And so I got very passionate about that topic because the whole thing of Los Angeles, that you have, I have some spiritual, I mean, self-righteous friends. Wait a minute. By me saying someone's self-righteous, isn't that self-righteous? Wait a minute.
We're all in our own soapboxes, Maria.
Like, when I had to go into the psych ward, as you do, sometimes you need to wrap a blanket around your meats and cheeses, put a little feed bag of microwave popcorn around your neck, and take yourself to Lost at Sea Hospital, because the Coast Guard is there, and you are lost at sea. And there you'll walk around a cement courtyard with a schizophrenic man with no teeth and no pants, and keep saying things like, "It gets better." I do not believe you, but you're very sweet. And,
Did you go to the hospital?
Yeah. I went about three, four times. I don't know what happened. You know, it runs in my family. I turned 40 or something. I don't know. I had some brain things going on where I just could not get out of it. Like I was planning to kill myself.
No.
Yes, I know.
Is this all the suicide material? Is it your brain trying to express that?
Yeah.
Don't you fucking kill yourself.
No, I won't. That is the funniest thing is that people are so mad. People will be so mad at you. And it is genuinely an illness. Like your brain is just screwed up. It's sick. It's not like a personal choice, like, oh, I'm mad at the world. It's like, it is unbearable, you know? And I think that's what, or at least I felt like people didn't understand, you know, people with PTSD, like, it is a living, like, it's not just depression, you know? It's not just like, oh, I feel hopeless or something like that. It is literally physically and brain-wise, like, unbearable. And that was, you know, like, I assume that's why people kill themselves. It's not out of, like, I mean, maybe somebody does it out of circumstance. And I try to write a joke about, you know, like, you know, oh, but I'm a waste of space and I'm a burden. Remember, that also describes the Grand Canyon. But I owe people a lot of money and everybody hates me. Hello, Europe. Oh, but I killed someone. So have onion rings, firecrackers, who gives a shit? Oh, but I've done some other horrible, unspeakable, unforgivable thing. There are 19 billion of us now. Google it. Somebody has done exactly what you have done, or worse, has gotten past it and is currently on a book tour. You're never alone!
How did you... I mean, first of all, I'm very pleased that somewhere you had the presence of mind to go get help. Whereas I feel like a lot of people wouldn't
do it. Well, and that's the hilarious thing. My mom's a therapist. I live in Los Angeles, one of the grooviest places in the world in terms of mental health acceptance. And I was like, oof, I got this. You know, I'll take care of it. Like, I would rather kill myself than go into a psychiatric facility.
Jesus.
And I think a lot of people, at least faced with that question, that's what my answer was like, and then I was like, well, you know, I obviously didn't want to do that to family and friends because I am beloved. But I thought, well, this worst case scenario, I'll go in and, you know, if that doesn't work or whatever. And they don't really knock you out. Like, it's not like, I think, to be in the psych ward, it's just so you don't hurt yourself. You know,
sure.
It's basically you take away your shoelaces and anything sharp, but it is kind of a place to be safe. You know, and that's what I needed was like a place so my because I didn't want my friends and family to feel like they had to watch me, which is what you have to do because your brain's going off the. You know, you keep having a repetitively shit idea. Again, this is material. I think I should kill myself. Oh, you know what? I got to kill myself. And then I realized, wait a minute. I've had a lot of repetitively shit ideas. I've often thought it'd be a great idea to buy day-old raisin bread in bulk and freeze it. Now, I'm not going to follow through on that. I've also thought many times it'd be a great idea to go on vacation with my family. They are my mortal enemies. I will fight them to the very last. We're just going to Michigan and going camping. I will not be dashed upon the rocks by your siren song.
I love the idea that you, that's almost a weird, it's almost a weird place to be where you go, I think I should kill myself, but wait a minute. I have so many dumb ideas.
Yeah.
That's probably a dumb idea too. That it's just like, it's just where it's almost like, low self-esteem battling Well, I love you to pieces, and I am so. What happened to finally make you get, well, I guess now that we're sort of talking real stuff, and this is the one thing that I always love about your material, is that as sort of cartoony as it can be, there is a very dense layer of, like, this is real. Like, if you really peel back the silliness, it's like, no, this is some fucking real shit that is being dealt with.
That's what I like to think. I like to think that too, Chris. And all that material's thought of in retrospect. Like, I was in outpatient treatment for almost a year. Like, I'd really, like, my brain really went off the rails. Like, I couldn't perform.
What did it feel like?
It just felt, and that, I think, was the super disturbing part, is that I feel a lot of pride in my brain, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I feel a lot of, like, you know, like that I'm fast and smart, and a lot of psychiatric medication, especially if they're taking, one thing, the first one they put me on was a mood stabilizer thing. And one of the side effects was that you have cognitive problems. So I started going on stage and not being able to say words.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I mean, it was like insane. And so, anyways, yeah, like any illness, people will tell you, you know, some of the side effects are worse sometimes than the condition. But it took just a long time. And I think also accepting that it was happening, that it wasn't like something that was going to blow over, that I had to take time off and take care of it.
That's what's sort of hard, because from your own perspective, when you're experiencing your life, it's hard sometimes to realize that you're in the middle of something, because it just sort of slides. It's the same thing with, like, alcoholism, where you sort of feel, I guess when you look back and you go, oh, I guess it was a gradual descent. But your point of view, it's just like all of a sudden you're in this thing, but then you're not sure. Or it's like any bad relationship I know we fight all the time, and I know that person tried to stab me, but it's probably not, you know.
No.
So what advice would you give to people? What were you going to say?
My friends have tried to intervene, but, you know, that fifth person, you know, they don't know what they're talking about.
When do you decide to go, okay, well, this is obviously not just generic, I'm down in the doldrums. This is like a real issue that I should take care of.
Well, I think it's like, sort of like addiction. Like, unless it's bumming you out, you know, unless it's like, if my mental illness, my depression or whatever is kind of working for me, which I was kind of agitated and kind of work, you know, didn't need to sleep and stuff. So awesome, you know, like awesome. Then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be great. And then, But there's so many beautiful memoirs and stuff that people have written. There's one by Maria Hornbacher. It's this funny title called Madness, which is just so beautifully written about, you know, just that gradual acceptance of, either you have to have some acceptance about the situation, otherwise it will not get better.
Sure.
You know, otherwise I'm going to, like, I tried to keep working. I was changing medications, and that ended up with me. I went to Chicago to 4 shows, and I was walking. Before the shows, I was like, okay. I couldn't think. I can't really explain what it was like, but it was like I could not think of anything. My brain wasn't together. And so eventually I started walking just to try to calm myself down. By the time I lost all my identification. It was bleeding. And I was like, I called my mom from the hotel, and I'm like, oh. And she's like, honey, get to the airport, go to Delta, tell them your gold medallion, and tell them about your website.
What?
And so it came to pass. I got a first class ticket home to LA.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It turns out, well, and also I'm a white blonde lady. And I was shivering and bleeding. And so I think they'd kind of want to get you out of the way.
Sure.
I don't think I was...
Just a travel tip for you frequent travelers out there.
Yeah.
Looking to get an upgrade?
Yeah. Just kind of look a bit distraught.
And so you skipped the shows and just came home, and there was nothing...
I mean, it was... I was trying to keep working, like, to go, okay, you know, just suck it up and do the job. You can just say the words, right? But then I wasn't able to say the words. You know, I wasn't able to think or say the words. And, like, I had some problems. I remember I did a show at Largo and was just devastated. Like, I used the wrong word as a punchline. Like, instead of relevant, I used, like, not elevator, but something sure. a little off. And, like, it didn't make any sense at all. And I was just like, And I think the whole brain, I have a lot of pride about it. Like, oh, you know, and it's the one thing that's ill. So it's telling me shit that's totally not helpful.
Right.
You know, but that's the thing that's trying to figure out how to fix it. And it's not working very well anyways. So
what happened in the hospital when you were there?
It was awesome. I mean, in terms of, it was, no, it's horrible. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's like a holding tank. It's not nice. It's not nice or pleasant. I mean, I'm sure there are some nice ones you can go to if you have $20,000 a month or something.
Sure.
But it was safe. You know, it's just like that feeling of like, safety that I'm not going to hurt myself.
They'll catch you.
I you know, I wouldn't be able to do it. And then, and that was good, just to have some place to be. And I went in like 3 times because I kept having problems with medications, just having, you know, and then with the depression and just feeling like you just feel like very distraught. And
were they basically just throw, I mean, because obviously, you know, everyone's brain chemistry is a little different.
Right, right.
So are they just throwing medic, like, well, try this. Fuck, that didn't work. Try this. Oh.
I mean, maybe it's not as bad as it was. You know, like, my mom is on, there's manic depression in my family. So, and my mom has been hypomanic before, which isn't the, yeah, where she's just gotten kind of agitated, mm-hmm. you know, and wanted to call the Pope a bunch of times.
Sure.
Which, I like that mania is always in the realm of possibility. Like, yeah, somebody should call the Pope. Give that guy a jingle jangle. You know? I mean, just tell him what's what. You know? she called my mom or my manager saying that I was in danger and that, you know, I needed to be taken off the internet. And, you know, fair. Actually, not too far off.
No.
I do feel like
sometimes you do want to get off the internet.
So I got on the same medication that my mom does well on. They say that sometimes that can work, and I didn't want to. You know, I was just like, this is so stupid. I'm just depressed. You know, because I kind of depression seems more acceptable to me.
So
know?
At what point just would you tell people some signs of like, okay, this is not just run of the mill, like, you get help.
If you're thinking of suicide at all,
right.
like on a regular basis, and I know there's a type of suicidal ideation that, I mean, I did that ever since I was a kid, sort of a fantasy of like, oh, I could just leave everything behind. And, you know, I think at some level, I may have that my whole life, just like, it's just a weird coping thing. But yeah, if you're feeling bad. I mean, I don't think there's any time that it isn't a bad time to do it, you know, because if you feel bad, sometimes it's a good idea to power down before you hurt yourself. Like, because I was starting to, because of the unbearability factor, I was like, and they did give me meds, and I was like, well, maybe I'll just take one of these now, you know, because my brain, I was just like, maybe I should take an Ambien now.
Right.
And, you know, I was falling asleep in front of friends, you know, and it was like, I was not making the best decisions, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if I would have gone in earlier, but I did not want to go in. I did not want to, but I was just sort of like, I thought I was trying to do what I think, you know, I would tell somebody else to do.
What do you do all day in the hospital? Do you sit there?
You just sit there. It's just there. You can walk around. Sometimes there's not a lot of money in mental health. It's no breast cancer awareness. You know, there aren't pink ribbons and people in scrubs covered in teddy bears. Because it's some of it is really, I think it's very painful. A lot of people have been abandoned by their families. Schizophrenia is so frustrating, difficult to treat, and there isn't a lot of money in it, so it's really a drag. It's not a nice environment. It's like there's a big screen TV with Ultimate Fighting playing. And
oh, my God.
I mean, it's just, it's super depressing. But also the great thing about it is that you don't have to pretend anymore. Like, you don't have to, like, go, everything's fine, you know, like, or, you know, be talking to people at work, or, you know, talking to anybody who's like wants you to keep it together.
Right.
You know, because I even had some friends. Yeah, because it's weird, because I felt really uncomfortable. My mom was in a manic episode. I did not want to talk to her. It was really a bummer. You know, I did. It was scary. And I had, you know, a lot of friends who were just like, oh, Jesus, you know, come back, Maria. You know, where have you got, you know? And so it was nice to just be in some place where, I mean, not that my friends don't love me, which they do, but I had some of that spiritual element of Los Angeles come visit me and say, this place is just really negative energy. You've got to get out of here. That's what I said, but I was 5150'd, right? It's like the cops came, so I was like, I guess I have to stay here, and then they took away all my stuff. You know what? Go up to Ojai, right? Like, jump off a cliff,
no.
Right? Or, like, you know, in a cold body of water where I slowly disappear. That's what I... You know, I just feel like this is the story you're telling yourself. You know, this is where you want it to be. I mean, my spiritual advisor just said, maybe you want to move on to the next world. Okay, you're horrible. And please come visit me tomorrow. And you're horrible. Why don't you bring that little ray of sunshine over to the children's hospital? You wouldn't have to make a wish if you believed.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, which I just find that so sickening. I mean, I just think that's no different than Christianity. And there's some element of truth in that. Like, I think a lot of things were coming to fruition in my life. There's lots of stress and stuff. But at the same time, you've got, you know, like with the soldiers who have been, you know, they're generally been through some trauma. It's not like, suck it up and take it. It's like, no, their brain has been injured by their experiences. Your brain chemistry gets all screwed up if you've been in a high stress situation for 3 years in a row, being afraid of dying, you know, or killing people. You know, there's just no way that wouldn't be like a knee that you've been, you know, hit a bunch of times. Oh, how do sports work? I don't know.
You're asking the wrong person. I don't know. There's a ball, and then you have to move it to some knee ball. Where you can only use your knees. It's not very popular. You can either be on your knees or use your knees to hit the knee ball.
Knee ball. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like that, because when you use your brain's like your knee. Sometimes you have bad knees.
So did you connect with anyone, or did you talk to a lot of a lot of PTSD?
Yeah, not really, because I don't really have. My dad was in the military. He was in the Navy, and so I feel like, or just feel some affinity of like. Just like I wouldn't have wanted my dad. My dad wasn't in combat or anything, you know, but like you just go, so you just abandon these people? And obviously there aren't enough resources, but there's enough resources for the actual war. Then,
right.
You know, like if you can't pay to take care of those people. And also there's, I think the military does do a lot for suicide prevention. Like my friend Jackie Cation went over there to Iraq and she said there was tons of things like how to prevent suicide over there because it is such a big thing. But I think there's still such a heavy stigma. And no matter how many posters you put up, like you're not going to go tell your superior, hey, I'm kind of freaking out right now because you need the money. You also like it's on your permanent record. It's also embarrassing. I mean, I'm a comedian and I was ashamed, mm-hmm. You know, I was ashamed to need help, you know, and it's like, that's ridiculous, you know, like, the comedians are, you know, we're supposed to be known for, you know, whatever, needing some extra help or something.
But you know, I just think it's important for people to, I think it's important for, it's important for people to not have the pride issue and to reach out. And to not listen to, I mean, I'm sure it's hard when other folks who don't have, I mean, I've talked about this a little bit before. It's very difficult to explain anxiety to someone.
Yeah.
And impossible, I'm sure, to explain mental illness to someone because if other people haven't experienced it, it's sort of like, I assume it's like what you said, where they just go, come on, aren't you really? Cheer up, have an ice cream. And you're like, no,
which
it's not.
I have as well. You know, like, I'm irritated by people who are depressed. You know, I'm just like.
May I have your attention, please?
Oh.
May I have your attention, please?
Okay.
Yes.
We'll be conducting a test of the life safety system in this area.
Oh.
My God, we're going to be part of a test.
That's so
bad. May I have your attention?
Oh. We got it.
We'll be conducting a test
of
the life safety system.
Of the life safety system in the building.
Okay.
I hope so. All right, this part is not a test. We had to do the test part. You're all in horrible danger. Gas leak, so on and so forth. Fire. All fine.
You know what's important now is one of the
Maria, what if I just pretend like I didn't hear that?
Yeah.
Or you pretend like you didn't hear that. I'm like, Maria, the life test. And you're like, what life?
What?
Yes, it's all a life test, Chris.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, we're all just trying to keep safe. We're all just trying to...
No, Maria, there's a life test. Do you see the blinking light above me? Us?
Oh, is that supposed to alert us of something? Oh, my God.
Skrillex.
Everyone, gather
what's
in
happening
the courtyard.
Could you give me the ecstasy?
Yeah.
Do people ask for ecstasy that way? I don't know how they do it. It feels like we're in a fucking worst rave. If an officer's like, look, it's casual Friday. We're going to have a rave. We're going to activate the life alert system, and then we're going to dance.
This is an interesting alert system. You know, just that if there was an emergency, I don't know if I would take that much notice of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I would just be like, it's the test.
Yeah, it's the test. Or,
but there's a man running by on fire, like the cover of the Pink Floyd album. I know. Wow. He's testing us to make sure.
Well, and that does segue a little bit back into what we're talking about in terms of, you know, people don't want to, we don't perceive danger until it's right in front of, you know, like people drive with their cell phones because they go, oh, I haven't had the experience of crashing at 60 miles per hour while talking on my cell phone, so it won't happen. And that's the same thing, I think, with mental illness. Like, if somebody goes, I'm fine, or they go, I've been able to suck it up before. I think I'll do that. You know, I've been having some weird thoughts, and, I'm kind of checking out my guns a lot more. But, yeah. I know, I'll be fine about around 2 a.m. this morning. I'll be fine.
Well, I guess it's also the same as Some people wait until it's too late.
Yeah, yeah.
But then other people, I tend to fall more on the side of like, this is a test of the Nerdist broadcast system. The broadcast in your area is in collection with the FCC.
It does make me feel sort of safe.
That siren's going to protect us, right?
Yeah.
I would fall more on the hypochondriac side of it sometimes, where I'm like, oh, I should probably go to, you know, and I don't ever, like, here's a great example of complete irrational behavior is that my girlfriend and I were visiting my dad in Las Vegas, and we're standing outside waiting to go into this restaurant, and an insect, I didn't see it, but all of a sudden I just felt a chomp on my arm, and I looked down, and I just see this kind of greenish insect, and I flicked it off out of response, and then there was just a little piece of skin missing, and it just like swelled up, like it just got puffy. And I was like, I'm poisoned. This must be poison
because
your skin shouldn't swell up, and that's poison. And I probably should go. And, you know, Chloe was like, you're fine. It was probably just a, and I go, but it wasn't like a mosquito because it was green. Grasshoppers chomp on. They could have been a grasshopper. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Should I find it? You know? And I just immediately went to the place of like, so, and she would be like, you just got bitten by a bug. You're fine. And I would go, no, you're right. I'm fine. And then there'd be silence and we'd be eating. And I go, at what point do you think an emergency room visit is in the future, you know?
Right, right.
And then, so I feel like sometimes I'm more on the too preventative.
Right, right, that you can be, and I totally get that, too, because, like, I mean, again, living in Los Angeles, we're all, there's lots of highly sensitive people, you know, saying, you know, I've got to have this special food at this time, you know, crushed, but hot, but cold.
Right.
But what I want, but not what I want.
Right.
Okay, thanks. And so there's that self-obsession part of it, which I don't want to be like that. And I think you're right that if you haven't been through it, that it is difficult to, just like anything. You know, it's like, I don't know what it's like to be married. I don't know what it's like to have breast cancer or whatever, which I can only imagine how horrible those were, but I can only imagine. So right. I probably don't respect it as much because I go, what did you get your breast taken off or whatever? What was that, 2 days in the hospital or something? You know, right. Like if you haven't experienced it, it doesn't become as. I don't feel that way about breast cancer.
No, of course. I think people understand what the point you're trying to make. I think they know. it's just to make the point of, it's very difficult for people to be. I think they might be able to sympathize, but it's difficult for them to empathize because if you haven't gone through something, how can you know? I mean, just hearing you describe the sort of. All the stuff crumbling and not being able to, I mean, it's amazing that you were able to hold it together enough to go get on a plane, go home, go to a hospital and not just like run into the ocean.
Right. You know? Just run.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what's going off.
That's what you need to have an alarm.
When you're not feeling.
Your life,
yeah.
When you're not feeling good.
A life alarm.
But there is, I mean, I know it would be, I'm sure if you interviewed my friends or family, which I'm
sure. It's mocking us now.
Yeah, exactly. This very serious topic. That they would, I bet I'm an irritating person. You know what I'm saying? I am one of those highly sensitive people who's just like, you're like, oh my God, stop feeling so much. You know, so there is some element of where I go, oh, I don't want to be, where I go. Like, I don't think my sister doesn't have these kind of experiences. She's just like, come on! You know, right. Like...
Get in the car! We have reservations!
Yeah. And how much of that is brain chemistry, how much of it is a chosen personality, you know, where I'm a curmudgeon. I don't know. I would hope to think that I'm a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed giraffe. With a happy smile. I don't know. I mean, I can see both sides of it because I've had friends who are depressed or have mental illness, and I'm just like, oh my God. Like, because it is a pain in the ass. Like, it's a pain in the ass.
Because you just want to feel okay. And there's a constant.
And they're acting weird. Like, they're acting, and they're bumming you out. You know, it's like.
Well, you know what? The other side of it, too, is that. Some people, I think, are so sensitive to absorbing what other people are feeling in a very selfish way that I think there's a certain defensiveness that happens because they don't want to take it on.
Right.
May I have
right.
your attention, please? Oh. May I have your attention, please?
This is...
This concludes the testing of the fire life safety system in this area.
I can't help but think that someone gave a better audition for this job than that guy. I mean, I do a lot of voiceover work, and so do you. And that guy was not selling it at all.
Well, maybe it was, but that was the sell, was that it was so real person every day.
Oh.
Like, he's so not voiceover talent that's what they're looking for.
I like to come in with a little cinema verite approach to life alarm system. Because I could come in and give this big performance like, this concludes the test of the life alarm system scene. But I feel like that's not what I'm about.
No. Well, Chris, you know, there's no reason you can't put your resume in. You know? But we all get our gifts.
I think you should audition. What would your take on the life alarm system be?
I do like the Muppets.
I'm animal.
And then you wouldn't even need to know what it meant.
That's awesome. I think there's a life alarm system, but it's just, oh wait, it's just a test. Oh no, wait, that is not a test.
Hey, welcome to the life alarm system.
You have 3 minutes to exit the building. Yay! I was saying I think sometimes really hypersensitive people are maybe seem like they're not sympathetic because they're defensive, because it's difficult. I find that I'm that way sometimes. Yeah. Like, you know, the worst person I'm that way with is my mom, where if she gets upset about something, sometimes I get mad at her.
Right.
Because the thought, and it's, again, it's very selfish, but the thought of taking on what I actually want to feel, which is like, I need to absorb this experience for you.
Right, right.
Is so painful.
Right.
That my reaction is just like, wall, I can't feel that because it's too much.
It's bringing you down, or it's frightening. I find it is frightening. Like, I had a friend who was in a manic episode, and like, you know, and I was frightened. I was just like, you know, like she was just totally acting bazooka and not totally bazooka, but just, you know, the edginess of bazooka. And it is frightening. So, I had a friend who his mom got suicidally depressed and had to go into the hospital. And, you know, they were watching her all the time that she wouldn't, whatever, do something. And he was super angry. People get really angry. And, yeah, maybe it is, like, taking it personally, like, I mean, like when somebody's, it's like when somebody's drinking or whatever, and you go, why can't you get better for me? You know, why isn't this enough for you to get better? And it isn't.
Well, it's hard because we think, well, in today's modern society, we have the tools to fix anything. What's the problem?
Yeah.
It's so simple.
So simple. Why don't you just stop eating, America?
It's easy.
Portion sizes, right? That's what they keep telling us on the back of the bus.
Just do it.
Have you seen those LA portion sizes things?
No, I don't think I've seen it.
The most adults only need 2,000 calories a day, and then it has a picture of a giant plate of eggs and pancakes and sausages, and then a more reasonable plate of
two eggs and a pan of sausage.
And it says portion size counts.
See, I only see on the back of the bus, dos avocados.
Dos.
But there was only one time, I've never, you know, even with, I mean, I think I have pretty manageable, like, anxiety and not a ton of depression. But, you know, I do get negative sometimes. But there was one time where I actually, I don't know if it was suicidal, but years ago,
right.
My back had gone out, and they gave me Vicodin.
Right.
And so I took a Vicodin one night, and it was just weird. And then it didn't really work. And so the next day, I had like a Valium or something to try to relax them because the muscles were
right.
And not a good idea. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I all of a sudden had this weird, and I don't know if it was, I feel like it had to be connected residual medication, and, you know, that's why it's not a good idea to mix medication without someone who is maybe a physician. I had this weird, almost uncontrollable urge to just go jump off the balcony where I was like, I don't think I can stop myself, like, breathe and talk myself out of it. And it was not feeling like you're in control of your own brain is probably my biggest phobia.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, because I'm very proud of that or something. And
how did you manage? How did you navigate those waters?
I kind of avoided doing shows or being around people because I was just like, I try to talk with I was going to an outpatient treatment program, so I'd go every day to this outpatient treatment program, and once I'd been in the hospital a few times, you know, got stabilized, then, and they give you meds, so it's like it wasn't me making decisions on what meds to give myself. Maybe I should take it now. Hey, Dr. Bamford. So that's another good thing about the hospital, because, I mean, a lot of people, that's like a high rate of death is from prescription drug.
Well, it's
because people make their own decisions.
They make their own decisions, and I think they don't realize, you know, I think they see, like, oh, prescription bottle, it's safe. It's not like, and you're like, no, it's drugs. Yes, I know they're legal.
Yeah.
But I remember after Michael Jackson died.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I was talking to Dr. Drew. He was doing Attack of the Show or something, and I was here, and we were talking, and he was like, you know, I've been saying for years that this sort of prescription drug cocktailing that people are doing, it's a bubble and it's going to burst and more people are going to die because they, you know, and even, you know, even if I've had to, like, one day I looked up, oh, I took an Advil in the morning and that didn't really help my neck that was fucked up. Can I take a Tylenol in the afternoon? Right. And then you see all these drug interaction websites and people are like, I took 4 Xanax and then I took a Valium, but I'm also on this other, and they're like, they're trying to basically like a stereo equalizer, but with drugs.
Yeah.
And it's like, how are you fucking people alive?
No, it's terrifying. I mean, that is terrifying. There's a...
Don't mix drugs.
Don't mix your prescription drugs. Well, and I think, I mean, at least for me, it felt like, because I was still sick, so I just wanted to feel better. So it was like, I just...
When did that happen?
Wanted to feel better. Well, it was, I guess, like, kind of like November of last year.
How long at this point had it been?
It's been like a year since I've been feeling better. Yeah. So maybe it is. Yeah. It's been like a year since I've been feeling better.
But when did you start feeling better in the process? Was it sort of, was it gradual or one day were you like, oh, I'm me again for a minute?
It's been so slowly gradual. Like it's been excruciatingly painful. Like I kept thinking, I've only really started to feel more like myself, like probably like the last 3 months. Like I was feeling like, oh, I can work more. And part of it is getting the meds, you know, because it takes a while for your body to get used to them. And then I was super sleepy, like a lot. And also, you know, I was really, I got afraid of kind of going off the rails again. So
sure.
I think, at first, I think I was a little over-medicated, you know, because I was a little bit scared of, like, not being able to sleep and kind of having a lot of great ideas. So, but now I'm feeling totally like myself.
Good.
And, it's been, like, 3 months. And it's so, I mean, that's what people say a lot about when you go through something is just how much you appreciate, like, oh, my God, this is exquisite. Breathing in and out is delightful.
Yeah. just being able to exist in a state where you feel balanced and safe and, you know, it's so funny when you're, you know, when you're, and again, please, I hope you don't think that I'm trying to equate my minor bouts of anxiety with what you went through, but just those times where you go, this is never going to end.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
And then later on and you're like, oh, I don't know. You got me again, anxiety. Yes. I thought I should know.
Well, every time before I go do shows, every time I do shows, like I go, I don't know. I just don't know. And every, like now it's been 20 years of doing shows. It's like, well, the worst thing that can happen has happened. I've been booed off stage. You know, I've been, you know, it's like that's happened. So why am I putting myself through this rigmarole? But my brain seems to like the process. Do you get nervous for shows?
A little bit. I guess it depends on what the show is. I wasn't really nervous about the special because I guess I just sort of felt like, well, this is it, you know, I can't do anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little nervous. You know, sometimes I get nervous at like the Chinese restaurant shows because I feel a little sense of, there's that guerrilla nature to it of I don't know the environment. I don't know how this is going to go. And I'm trying new material. Like I get nervous in a fun way where it's like a little nervousy excitement, like, you know, but it's not really that bad.
Yeah. I like open mics because everybody's super excited, you know, like try the new bits and it's a nice vibe. But then of course there's the element of sitting around, which sometimes I try to get around.
You've put in the time. I think it's okay at this point. You're not trying to Dane Cook anyone at the open mic. Yeah. Like, it is Maria time. I want to do an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do that, but I can see that would be great, you know, to feel like I'm just going to cruise over to the comedy store and do like, you know, work on my stuff. But my act isn't really like I don't benefit from, they're not talented enough, not famous enough. Anyways, it was number one of those things.
Stop it.
But just that, yeah, I don't think that would serve me to show up at the Laugh Factory and say, can I do a, you know, just do a quick set, you know?
Just walk up there and work some shit out.
Yeah. Like, I think it would be
like playing Russian roulette.
Do you think your next special is going to be about this experience?
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. The current one has this. Has a lot of the material in it.
That's so fast. I mean, the idea of it. Just to step back for a second and think about the special that you did about mental illness to your parents.
Yes.
In your house.
In my house.
That is a show that people can watch. That's amazing. Here. It really is amazing.
I hope it's good. I mean, it's hard for me to tell if it's good or not, but it seems...
Because your audience was two people who were your parents. Well, but you, I mean, listen, I don't know, you know, I mean, I would watch you I would watch you read out of a phone book, you know, like now all I can think of is going home and you can download it now?
Yeah.
What? Can I download it now, like when I get home?
No. You download it on the 28th. Wednesday the 28th, it will be available on chill.com.
Okay.
Chill.com. chill.com.
It's a good domain.
Yeah.
Try and park that motherfucker.
Yeah. And it's $4.99. And the keyboard player is Wayne Federman. The opening act is Jackie Cation.
Love both of those people.
Marilyn and Joel Bamford, currently residing on Little Lake Pequom, Minnesota.
Any bulldogs in the special?
There are pugs.
I'm pugs. Fuck! I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. It's not racist.
Pugs are Ewoks to bulldogs Wookiees.
Yeah.
How about that?
Pugs, one pug and one Chihuahua pug. Blueberry is the new Chihuahua pug who Blossom passed away.
I'm sorry about Blossom.
But she was not in the special as much because she likes to run around, and I thought, I don't know. I mean, I don't want her to feel like she.
So management going to take care of this? We're shooting a special.
Yeah.
Blueberry, please sit down.
Who's this? Come on. So
I don't come to your place of business and piss all over your. You're pissing on the floor.
Sorry,
shit, this is my floor.
I didn't let you out. No,
Mom.
Bert's in it, and he's an old hand. You know, he's been in a few videos. We tried to shoot a cop series where he was the grizzled veteran, and then I was the upstart. and we're riding around in a cop car together.
Well, I hope you know, and I hope you don't feel that. I hope you don't feel that I'm taking any of this lightly.
It's also hilarious.
But I also feel like you're here and you're safe and I feel like that so often with this kind of thing, it is very serious, but. It's like sort of like talking about anxiety. Like it doesn't always have to be like, this is the worst thing. I mean, like obviously it's a terrible thing, but I think being able to talk about it openly and comfortably is therapeutic and good for people to see like this is just a thing that happens. And sometimes you just got to have a conversation about it and talk about it. And it's okay.
Yeah, I don't want to be sad all the time. Like because it was really funny. The I got a ride every day to the outpatient program in an giant old bright purple van that was owned by the hospital, unmarked, but just bright purple. And then it was, you know, filled with various clientele.
I got a
ride, you know, just because it just seemed like better because I was taking so many weird drugs and I was like, I'll just get a ride. But it was just such a humbling experience. Like, the van's here for you. And, get on in. But the best part, like one of my best memories is like I texted my friends purple van in 5 minutes and the purple van went by their store and they came out and like waved at me.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It was so sweet. Oh. And I had some friends who came to visit me every single day, which is fucking hardcore. Like, because it was a dire place and they came to visit me. You know, we have like, it's ridiculous, you know, just like it's hilarious as well, you know, just experiences like that or because it is sort of frightening and but it was but it's very funny. It's very funny.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important for you
in
to
retrospect.
In retrospect, funny. Not at the time.
Yeah, at the time.
But terrible. I think it's important for you to. I think it's important for you to be open about it and talk about it because a lot of people, certainly a lot of people listening to this podcast, love you and look up to you, and to have you come on and show that, you know, not only are you okay, but that it is something that people shouldn't be ashamed of, and the fact that you're able to make some comedy about it, which is, I feel like, a comic's way of, you know, like bitch slapping at a situation and showing like I have triumphed over you, you know. It's right. Important. I feel
yeah,
it's important
yeah, no,
for people
they
to hear.
Bitch slap it and,
can they tweet? They can tweet at you.
Oh, totally tweet at me.
Are you Maria Bamford on Twitter or Maria Bamfu?
Maria Bamfu.
Yeah.
There's already Maria Bamford and there's so many comics who have been open about it. Jonathan Winters in the 50s and 60s, he was in and out of the psych ward and talked about it openly on, you know, the talk shows of that day. Dick Cavett.
Have you been on?
Been open.
That's revolutionary back then to
yeah.
talk about it.
Oh my
it,
God! I mean, they would just hand out. They just what he said. I got to talk to him, and he said they just had a giant jar of Valium. Like it was just like that was the only.
Oh,
you just
fuck.
Ran its course, and we're in there for months.
That's like fucking. That's barely not bloodletting.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. It is just like bloodletting.
Paul Gilmartin, have you done the mental illness happy hour
I'm
yet?
I'm going to do it tomorrow.
Oh, good,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
Paul's great.
Yeah, and I just think it's only going to get better, like the science and stuff like that, because, you know, there's people and, yeah, I think about back in the day, you know, you just, there wasn't help or wasn't the medications weren't as specific. Again, I am anti-medication on a lot of levels. It's like, oh, I totally exercise. I eat right. You know, I'm like I go to a jillion support groups. You know, I'm doing everything on all level. Like, it's not just I'm very happy in my career, and that still happened. Like, it wasn't like, hey. You know, hey, you with your poor attitude. You know, it was
right.
Like, no, it, yeah, it's just, sometimes that happens. Anyways, but yeah, go for help. It's so fun. and then, you know, you can have an experience and it helps me to talk about it, to be willing that if it happened again, that I'd be willing to go get help. Because there's kind of like, at least I love... You know, the American story of like, and then they triumphed. And never again would they enter the, you know, like
right.
Walking away. And at least, I mean, not to also say, you know, negative thinking, but just to say that it's okay to get help more than once.
Right. Like, one time.
Well, that's what I totally felt like. I felt like I, because I had depression and stuff as a kid and gotten a ton of therapy. And I was like, come on, Maria. You know, you've
right.
gotten enough help. And it's like, well, apparently I still, you know, I mean, they always do those related with physical illness, like people with diabetes, they don't just stop needing
sure.
insulin.
Sure.
Nothing is like diabetes, it turns out. Only diabetes.
Just diabetes is like
just
diabetes.
Like diabetes.
Yeah.
But diabetes, no, it is not.
But it's hard because, you know, so much of our experiences are thought-based and it's easy to forget, like, no, well, those are chemical expressions of the way we process that, you know, like it's, they're just as medical as, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that it would, you know, that would just be like your tummy or cancer. I mean, and
your
then there
brain
are some
tummy.
People who believe, yeah, your brain tummy. There's some people who believe that that's your fault too, that you're responsible. Like there's the Louise Hay spirituality sort of thing, which is like, you know, oh, if your feet hurt, maybe you're not standing on your own 2 feet, you know, like,
oh right, trying to make those connections.
So like you have cancer, maybe it's because you haven't been expressing your cancerous feelings towards something, which I see the side of that where there is some sort of positive psychology, but then at some level boy, that leaves people high and dry. Like,
yeah.
And you're going to go off your AIDS medication because you believe that, you know, it was just the reason that you're diagnosed with AIDS or HIV is because, you know, it was just some issue you had with your father, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like that's hopefully the alarming minority of people.
One would hope so,
believe those things. But it's really hard now because, you know, I'm so torn about it because the pharmaceutical industry is so massive and it makes so much money. And then you go, look, okay, I know that in some cases, it's just hard to know when it's okay.
When it's okay and when it's not.
Wait, is it really okay to be taking this, or are you getting is this a pharmaceutical company thing? And now I'm just on a bunch of medication that I have to be on for the rest of my life. I don't know. You know, like that part of it seems like difficult waters to navigate. So was there a specific?
No, I mean, that was terrifying too. Like, cause I had a couple different psychiatrists, like one in hospital and one out of the hospital. And both of them were saying different things. And I mean, that's a terrifying part of it too, is that, I mean, my dad's a physician. It's like, he doesn't know, you know, like it's all like science. Like you cannot, what is the science of proving? You can't prove something? Is it experimentation? I don't know. There's something like my dad, whenever I ask him a question like, so does that work for, you know, rosacea? Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, like it's just very frustrating answers that it works for some people sometimes. And they're just doing their best to, but you know, hopefully you get, I mean, what I find was important with a physician is just somebody who I felt like at least listened to my perspective, mm-hmm. you know, like when, you know, even if I sounded cray cray, you know, was like, okay, it sounds like, you know, you're not able to think, or, you know, was take my concerns somewhat seriously. I mean, I get it. If you're talking to people who are out of their gourd all day, it's like, but also that's part of the job too. I had one doctor who's really great. He just said, I heard that it's Atul Gawande, he's the medical writer for the New Yorker. Sometimes he writes about how listening is half of medicine, of listening to the patient, and that you really need to. That's healing in itself.
Right.
And I found that to be true, that when the doctor was, you know, heard my experience and my concerns of, that was super helpful. Like, I did get irritated. The psychiatrist was like, so I talk for a living, but you didn't, I mean, and the main side effect for this is maybe difficulty speaking.
And no one bothered.
And you couldn't give me a heads up. And, you know, it's a job. You know, she didn't, she just didn't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I also wanted to go on it. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, well, does that work? That's good. Yeah. It is hard to know, because I know it seems some people would do better without meds. Like they, you know, hey, why don't you live in a nicer place or clean your room and get some friends, and that will lift your mood, you know? I mean, I think those things are just as important. But if a person is trying to do that or can't, they're stopping able to function, then I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
What?
I'm just a headlining comedian who works in some cities.
Are you performing anywhere before we?
Claremont Flappers this weekend.
Oh, good, good, good.
And then we'll be at Minneapolis at Wits.
What's the name of your special?
It's called The Special, Special, Special.
November 28th.
November 28th.
At chill.com.
Yeah, DL it.
I am so happy that you were here. And actually, you know, I know Matt and Jonah couldn't be here, but it was really nice to talk to you one-on-one. And I hope that people really listen and can, you know, help and benefit in their own
what you went through. I know I've learned something, and that's that I won't shut up. I have so much to say.
You know what you need, Maria? Hugs. I'm going to come hug you.
I love hugs.
And everything's going to be fine. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. At Maria Bamfu on Twitter.
Yes.
Give her some hugs.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Are we done now, Chris? Can I have a biscuit?
That's Cox's life alert, Tess. So I'm just keeping real, yo, Tess.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.